we want to start?
I'll get there. Stay relaxed, y'all. All set?
Got to have my pen back right
here. Got to have it. That's a good pen.
All right, good morning. I will call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, October 20th, 2015, and ask if everyone please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so? And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll go to consideration of minutes from October 13th.
Move approval.
Second. A motion and second. Any additions or corrections? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Minutes pass. Personnel actions as listed, board.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Personnel actions pass. It is a claims week, board.
Okay. Looks good. Move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Claims pass. Consent agenda, board. Please add utility permit 1632. And let's go ahead and pull item number two. Since we've got Barb here, she can just spend 30 seconds on the IP Pathways renewal.
Okay.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items today.
You got to deal with that one.
You don't want to do it? I want to do it when Barb comes up. Barb's going to be up in just a minute. Oh. I want to do it in one fell swoop.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Sorry about that. I should have clarified. No public.
Yeah, because we're on the consent agenda, normally you would just come back and then take it there. But, okay.
Just going to have Barb come up once. Public hearing, no public hearing items. First additional item is discussion and consideration of drafts, capital improvement plan, and public review process. Leanne Harder. Good morning, Leanne.
Good morning. It's actually hard to believe it's that time again, but it is. We are looking at the process for the next iteration of the capital improvements plan. What today is about is an introduction to what the draft plan is, and then some action by you all to have us go forward with the public review process. And shortly, I'll show you the time frame. Just quickly running through again, first draft or first capital improvements plan was adopted in May 2013 with the May 2013 strategic plan. This draft CIP runs from fiscal year 2017 to fiscal year 21, so it is a five-year capital improvements plan. In the past, we've always had five-year increments, but we've never gone all 5 years out, and you'll see that that is different this time around. The process that was followed is the same that you've seen in the past couple years, organizing, identifying projects, selecting projects. We select that through receiving input from department heads and elected officials through requests for projects to add, formatting all the materials to come forward, and then public review and then adoption ultimately next spring. Just some definitions that remain consistent from year to year. Capital assets are defined. Capital projects are defined. We have four types of projects. We have equipment, or a new project construction, a modification of an existing project, or building maintenance. And the projects you'll see are categorized along those four lines. I'm not expecting you to look up there and see all the projects. They are listed in the draft CIP, and I have copies available for the public as well if you'd like them. And it was online with the agenda for this morning's meeting. We are, again, as I said, going fiscal year 2016, 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21. a little bit different, that we have projects throughout all those increments. I'm not going to go detail into each and every project. That's actually for the December and then the actually official adoption. But the new ones that were added this year really deal with kind of an iteration or a rewrite of existing projects, most notably the Justice Center. If you'll recall, consolidation of the county attorney's space was on there previously and is in our current one. That we broaden that scope, and it's more of a Justice Center review, planning review and work. We did receive requests from the Sheriff's Office for some flooring needs, and the viewpoint of the committee that we need to look at it in one fell swoop rather than on piecemeal by piecemeal basis. In that regards, too, the admin building infill addition is approached the same way. 1 year studying it, second year you're actually doing construction. So if there are any questions on the projects, I can go over those, but again, they are available in the draft plan. Opportunities to provide feedback. Once you take action today, we'll have comment sheets available. They're very simple. They look like this, a big blank space in the middle. It's a fillable PDF so people can go online and just type in it. Or we'll have copies available at the front desk so they can take them, fill them out, leave them. We'll also set up the county blog like we did last year. We didn't receive any public feedback from that format, but we'll still go ahead and do it because I think it's a great opportunity to get input. And there are more projects this year, or a lengthier process time frame this year for projects. We may get some feedback. Facebook, Twitter, of course, social media, and then paper copies available at the main entry of both the draft plan and then the comment sheet. So the process is today is the first presentation to the board. You would direct staff to then put everything online and distribute the materials via social media. The public comment period will run from October 20th through December 4th, and I would be back here on December 15th to share the public comment that we received. That then allows you to keep the draft CIP and public comment in mind as you work through your budget work sessions with elected officials and department heads, and then come back in probably later February, early March for the adoption of the CIP prior to the formal adoption of the budget. With that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Yeah, I just want to underscore that action today does not approve anything in the CIP other than the draft plan going out for public comment. This will be where we kick off our budget work sessions. Lisa, I just saw the calendar from you. It's January 5th with the CIP. January 7th at 9 a.m. we'll see it, the CIP discussion. That will be the first time that some of this stuff will start to solidify in budgetary terms. And until it solidifies in budgetary terms, nothing's happened.
Right.
So that's where we are. Questions for Leanne?
No, I would move approval of the draft plan and the public notification of the CIP.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? Two.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Draft capital improvement plan is approved. We can get it out for public review. Thanks, Leanne.
Yeah, let me just have a hard copy. I like to keep those when I.
Okay.
In my notebook, but this is easy to read what you've got online, so kind of easier than the chart.
Outstanding. Next item, we're going back to consent agenda item number two, consideration of contract between IT Pathways and IT for hardware maintenance. Morning, Mark.
Good morning. Barb Steinbeck, Information Technology. And you had a question on the IP Pathways maintenance invoice.
Yeah, just since you had to just talk us through what it is while you're here.
Well, this is maintenance and support and notification for the NetApp, which is our storage device. And with this, it's a one-year agreement. We replaced our NetApp last year, so this will be the first year that we pay the maintenance on it. And then next year, the way they do it, it's incremental. So by year five or year three, we're paying almost $25,000. So it started at $8,000 this year. Next year, it'll be $12,000. Then it'll be $15,000. And the way they do this is so that you'll replace your hardware every 3 years. But that's all it is. It's just the maintenance on the new device that we purchased last year, which is our storage.
And what did the device cost us, roughly?
$70,000.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That was all I had.
Okay. I would move approval of the contract between IP Pathway and Information Technology, effective 10-1-2015 to 10-31-2016 for $8,081.05.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Two?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Now, consideration of maintenance agreement between AOSNC LLC.
It's a new vendor that I've gone to for licensing. The previous vendor we've had a lot of issues with. We've missed renewal dates because we did not receive notifications. So after a lot of frustration, I reached out to AOS, and they helped me with this one. Now, this is a tricky one. It's the VMware licensing that was originally purchased almost 5 years ago through a mental health grant. So it never made its way to the IT budget.
There was additional funding that year from mental health dollars. We
bought this for CLP so that they could do a better job working out in the field.
Virtual.
Right.
Yeah.
So that they could have their desktop with them wherever they went. Is that right?
Right.
Who's using this today?
Well, I'll get into that.
Okay.
We did, when I came here, we were not using the virtual desktop. This included servers and desktops. And so I asked Joel to implement the virtual desktops because we had the licensing, why not use it? It wasn't quite what the bill of sale sold to us as. It didn't work out, and so we discontinued it. So now we've had to, with all the changes we've had in the servers, that in the beginning we had just a few servers on this, and now we virtualized our entire data center. So everything is residing on this. Instead of trying to work with the vendor who would never respond, I worked with AOS 5 to rework the package, include everything that we have now, and also include some alerting so that if there is a server having issues, we will get email alerts. And then also for Site Recovery Manager, which is a DR solution, part of VMware. So if one of our servers does go down and we haven't responded to the alert quickly enough, it will move everything to another server. So it just kind of... it's called HA, High Availability. So it moves everything to another server. So this whole package includes disaster recovery, notification, and complete licensing for all of our servers. Now, this includes some, I think our licensing expired in May, so it includes some true-up from May. But moving forward, it'll be $10,000 a year for maintenance. Now, we haven't moved to the Microsoft licensing yet, but there's another thing that I need to reconcile after CLP has gone away. So I believe this cost savings that we'll see in the Microsoft licensing will cover this for this year, and then next year we'll include the $10,000 in our budget.
Okay, so this virtualizes all of our servers, or it's the maintenance for virtualizing all of our servers?
It's the maintenance for the software that we use to virtualize all of our servers. Every one of our servers is now virtualized, which saves on hardware costs, ultimately, because you can house 10 to 12 servers on one box, one physical box, instead of having 10 to 12 physical boxes. So it's kind of like the operating system, if that's a better way to explain it, that virtualizes our servers, that allows many servers to reside on one piece of hardware.
Okay. I'm sorry that I'm so elementary here, but I really want to understand. So originally we bought a system using mental health dollars that was intended to be used by our case workers in CLP to be able to have their access to their desktop, case notes, everything, anywhere they work, and be able to log in. As we underwent the mental health transition, we still had this package, and IT started using it at that point to virtualize.
Oh, they didn't use it.
We started, initially it just included a few servers because that's all we had then. It includes servers and workstations.
Okay.
And since then, you know, the workstation part of it has diminished and the server portion has grown. And the licensing structure is a little different for that. So all this did, all it did was just reconcile and true up. Let's see where we're really at on this. Since it was a grant, or since it was leftover funds, and it was for, you know, a term, not necessarily a year. Now it will be annually, but that was, I believe they bought 3 or 4 years.
So let me ask a question. So in layman terms, it's not like you've got a laptop that you could use remotely, externally, that hooks into the server and so forth, like you would be in the field, or if you were law enforcement, or if secondary roads, or maybe environmental health, for example, would basically have. The capabilities to access information into the server would be readily available if they were using it.
Yes.
Okay. And to your knowledge at this point, how many are actually using this type of laptop or, you know, thing? Are we're not using it necessarily individually?
We're not using it now.
Okay. Is there an advantage to evaluate that to determine whether or not this is still something that we want to continue to make available or have available?
Well, virtual workstations are designed, in my mind, for salespeople. People are on the road all the time and need, it would be as if your desktop was with you all the time.
Right. Right.
We do have implemented another solution that we use in the IT department, which is called a VPN connection,
right,
where we can actually use an internet connection to VPN into our own desktop. So, you know, as far as the county goes, there's not a lot of people that travel as 90% of their job. So it doesn't really make sense when we also have an alternative VPN solution that we can use,
okay,
to pay for licensing on desktops.
So
what we need it for is our server environment.
So in a way, this is kind of like a cost shift in terms of the software,
yes,
potential hardware, et cetera. So.
And I think the decision initially was made in a hurry, like sometimes we have to do, and so it wasn't, and granted, VMware back then wasn't as robust, and you couldn't do as many things as you can do it now, so I'm not sure how well it was evaluated, but.
So is this something that we could take a look at over the next calendar year to come back later time and maybe evaluate, you know, determine what type of cost savings we might expect? Or, you know, you're looking at it from just a total management operation of the server system,
yes,
and all of those types of things. Okay. And so you've determined that this addition enhances what we're already having in place, or not?
It doesn't enhance, but it is what we have in place.
It is, yes.
Okay. And definitely will be reviewed on an annual basis, so that we don't get stuck. And now that we do have it on our IT radar, it's not something that I wouldn't advocate anyone receiving extra funds or grants to spend it on software. A lot of times it's wasted. I remember FileNet, $80,000 was spent on that as under similar circumstances it was never used because it was never explained that you also had to spend another $80,000 to convert your data files to use in FileNet. So I guess it would be my opinion that we don't do anything like this again. Continue with VMware, of course, because it's an essential part of our environment right now, but as far as making decisions like this, I think it needs to be more carefully thought out. Any more questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an essential part of our environment right now.
Yes, we have grown.
What's later?
The licensing structure here covers a broad array. Initially, and VMware since then has also changed their licensing structure. Previously, and I don't want to get too deep into this, but a server has processors. Say a server has 4 processors. So you would be licensed based on the number of processors in your server, not necessarily your server. Like one server could take 4 licenses if it had 4 processors. So now they've changed the licensing so that it's per unit, so that we don't have that anymore. I see that as a cost savings for us in the future rather than costing us more. So this is what this license covers is a range. Instead of saying, you know, you have 4 processors, so that's what you're paid for, it's like 50 to 100. So we've got a range that we can build in there it'll be good for us for quite a few years in the future. And as technology has developed, we've learned to consolidate our servers as well. So every time you have a new application, you don't have to throw up a new server. You can use, you know, the same thing that another server is using. They share resources. I know, VMware, it's hard to understand and get your hands around.
What we're finding, Barb, and we just spent time down at ISAC, the ISAC Board of Directors, looking at a new system that was coming in, and the general rule of thumb is about every 5 years, you're probably going to need to look at your system in terms of any upgrades that needs to be taken and so forth, depending upon the different types of things that come in. This one happens to be so tied into the CSN and the other types of things, and ISAC's ability to look at data from all 99 counties, and it'll go into one particular area. And so I see the kinds of things that you're talking about here. It's just something that's just part of the ongoing IT infrastructure that needs to be evaluated and looked at, and then trying to determine what is the most cost-effective way for us to maintain the level of service that we're trying to generate, because counties like our department, not only are we interested in serving internal customers, departments, but what is made available for external people to be able to look at what we do and how we operate and all of those types of things is just part of the ongoing world which we live in today, I suppose.
It is, and I think it's important to point out that this software helps replace some of the hardware costs. I mentioned earlier that you may have one server that can house 10 to 12 servers within it that are virtualized. If we didn't have this software, we'd have to buy 10 to 12 servers. So a server can cost up to $12,000. So there is tremendous cost savings to virtualize, and how they get away with that is your servers aren't all using the same resources at the same time. So if you have 10 servers residing on one box, they're sharing resources. And you set priorities, for instance, real estate. That definitely would have a priority. So it gets more of the share rather than some of the applications that aren't used as much. I hope that explains it a little better. You still look
When a server is virtualized, does that mean that the information is no longer housed on that server? It's housed somewhere else?
That's where the NetApp comes in.
Right.
All the information is stored on our NetApp. And just the operating system of the server installation is on that box. And then that box knows to any data that's entered into that is stored on the NetApp. So they work very closely.
Right, but the NetApp is off-site somewhere. It's a storage unit that's off-site somewhere.
Yes.
Okay. And so what we're paying for here is the ability to have our one server be able to go out and pull the information that we've got stored elsewhere. And that's what keeps us from having to have 12 different servers here.
Right.
Is that right?
Right. And we do have 30-plus servers that are virtualized right now on three boxes. Three physical boxes, we have 30 servers.
Okay.
Well, I wish I knew enough about this to even ask an intelligent question.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I can get there, but I really... So I'm struggling with the line of how we got here. This was purchased, rightly or wrongly, it was purchased using mental health dollars as a mental health application to actually work in the field. It didn't have anything to do with servers at that point. It had everything to do with virtualizing the ability of people to work in the field, right or wrong. When we bought it.
Half right, because you needed the server to be able to run the workstation application.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got the workstation, which feeds into the server, and now I've got an application that allows me to access, through the server, my desktop so that I can work out in the field.
Yes.
So I'm looking at it that pathway. That was the original intent of this when we went and got it.
I believe so. Those people are no longer
shake
here.
Your head, yes.
So I believe so. However, it was never implemented until just last year when I said we have a licensing, let's try it, and decided it probably wasn't going to work. It wasn't well received.
But it does work as an application for IT to minimize the number of servers we've got to have,
yes.
Which saves us money in the long run because now we're not buying hardware, we're putting it in the virtual.
Correct, which is why I want to pull it under the IT budget.
So just help me with this. Do we still have the capability to do some kind of virtual test desktop? Let's say, for example, as a complete hypothetical, but let's say that Story County decided we like the idea of a satellite office in Ames where we could do things that the auditor does, do things that the treasurer does, do things that the reporter does. Everybody came together and we had something like this. Would this give us the ability to set up a desktop public service kind of box over there, have an employee who cross-trained could provide those services and have access to the desktop back here?
Not this particular configuration. However, we do have, as I mentioned, another application that will provide the same services that's a lot less expensive. It's our VPN connection.
Okay.
And that's just configured on the firewall. All you have to do is have a network connection, and you can achieve the same results as a virtual workstation.
Okay. So I need to be looking at this as a standalone IT component that just minimizes the amount of hardware we've got to buy server-related.
Exactly.
All right. Okay. All right, I'm there.
Perfect.
I guess my biggest question to you, and this is going to be really simple, but as the IT director, you see this $34,000, almost $35,000 expenditure as a wise use of tax dollars that could potentially have the ability to save us money in the long run.
Definitely, and remember, this is a one-time. This is a startup. We wanted to be removed from the mental health fund, so we started up with a new contract, and there are fees associated with the new contract. However, moving forward, the maintenance will be $10,000, and I will, I believe, be able to recoup almost all of this when I true up the Microsoft licenses for people that are no longer here. So, you know, add that to the hardware of replacing a server every 3 to 5 years, I definitely think it's a good solution.
And we're taking advantage of something that we purchased in the past and weren't really ever using, but now we're going to put it to good use.
We were using it, but we're going to, put it to really good use.
But it's repurposing something that we bought for an entirely different use, and that's what I was trying to get my mind around.
Okay. Other questions?
If not, I take a motion.
Good.
Move approval of the maintenance agreement between AOSNC LLC and Information Technology, effective 9/23/15, 9/22/16 for $34,685.
Second. All right, we got a motion and a second. Barb, I just want to clarify, it's almost $35,000 that's not budgeted, but you expect to be able to handle that within your budget through savings from the Microsoft license.
Yes, I do.
So no budget amendment you expect attached to this.
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Clint?
Aye.
Two?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Passes. Barb, thanks.
Thank you.
I need a break.
Well, when I watch the YouTube video, I can watch all that information going right over my head.
Yeah. It's an interesting job we have here, Tudor. Departmental reports, community services. Carla and Aaron. What'd you do to your shoulder, arm? What'd you do?
Yeah, that's my shoulder. I had some.
Sharon Turtle's all kinds. I tried to tell her.
Yeah, right. Did I do that at safety?
Once every 50 years.
I had surgery. I had a fall a few months ago.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. You should have just bid on that and said, you bet. So you missed a golden opportunity.
toughest schedule in college football.
Yeah.
Okay.
All
right. Drew, any Pee Wee teams on that schedule this year? Which was one of your tougher games?
Oh, got to rest up.
That's right.
I'm Carla. Hi there. With Community Services, and what Aaron handed out to you is a survey that was completed within our region, and I'll get to that here within my report. I wanted you guys to have a copy of that. First, I'll talk about our general assistance, and this is covering from July through September of this year. Total, we've assisted 57 either single family households or a family household. Denials or referrals to other agencies, we've provided 211 of those. Individuals who had applied but did not return for various reasons, we had 18 of those within the quarter. And then listed there, too, I show the primary types of assistance. For rent, so far through September, we've spent $16,116.16. Utilities, we've spent $2,674.70. And then miscellaneous items, such as transportation, burial assistance, we've spent $4,012.98. As far as substance abuse services, we've paid on 7 different claims there. With access, there's been various meetings that were held throughout the quarter. We covered funder priorities at our August 13th asset meeting. Also, volunteer orientation was held for the volunteers that are new, as well as anyone else who's been a volunteer and wanted to fit in on that training. We did that on September 10th. The annual agency training was held on August 26th, and then we had a joint funders meeting, and that was held on September 10th. Agencies did turn in their budgets. Those were due on September 25th, and members of the administrative team met on September 30th to review those. For the region, we wrapped up our FY16 contracting during this quarter, and also we started work on our FY15 annual report, and that is due December 1st. Members of our regional administrative team, as well as members of our regional advisory board, have toured some crisis stabilization centers in the state as we're working to gather information on services already being provided out in the state and look to bring that back to our region. We work on setting something up within our region for those services.
It's a real need in our region, isn't it?
I believe so.
Does it belong? Okay, so we're the population hub. Mm-hmm. We got Mary Greeley as the primary provider in the region.
Right.
Does it belong here or does it belong somewhere else? I mean, is this something that we're going to need to weigh in on along with the region?
I think potentially so. Some of our initial conversations are looking at locating it within Story County. So yes, I think so, bringing in key individuals here within the county to look at those services. Let's see. We've contracted with Foundation 2. That contract went into effect October 1. That is to provide a 24-hour crisis phone line. That'll be region-wide. We're looking for that line to go live November 1st. So they're in the process of getting that phone line established. The region is responsible for marketing the line, so we're working on pulling information together to market it.
Where does the call go?
It'll go to Foundation 2, which is in Cedar Rapids.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Several entities around the state utilizes that service already,
yep.
And I've heard nothing about that.
We also worked with Optima Life Services to open up a 4-bed transitional housing home. It's a duplex. It currently has 2 beds on each side, and it's staffed up to 16 hours a day, and individuals are able to be there for up to 90 days. We have service coordinators connected with them right away to help work on transitioning them back out into the community or back to their home, wherever it may be that they're looking to go. The site opened up September 1st, and it was full within that first week. There are, I believe, 2 individuals that are moving out this week or real soon here, and so we'll be getting new individuals in there.
And are we going to be able to track the individuals that go? I mean, clearly we want to see something positive coming out of this. Are we going to be able to track what happens with these individuals?
Yeah, we're tracking outcomes for that and looking at where are they discharging to.
Yep.
Thank you.
The client survey, which is what we have handed out to you, this was sent out to 302 individuals. It was 20% of a random sample of the claims that we had paid in FY15. So we paid 1,511 different paid on 1,511 different individuals in FY15, so it's a random sampling of those folks. We had 42 that were returned to us as non-deliverable. Of the surveys that went out, we had 41 surveys returned, which came out to be about 16% return rate. The things that were kind of identified to us through that were individuals that were unsatisfied with their living arrangements, often identified they were not accessing community-based services, but rather facility-based services. Also, individuals that identified they were unsatisfied with their employment commented that they did not have a job, and transportation was identified as a service that we need to improve on, which is something we've also identified at our administrative team level as well. I wanted to just mention, too, our service claims. We started July 1st paying those out of Madison County. The claims are getting processed through Marshall County, and that system seems to be working very well. Is there any questions for me?
Carla, thanks.
You bet.
Okay, I'm supposed to just talk, and this thing picks me up, huh? Okay, awesome. Erin Reworth, Central Iowa Case Management. So this is our quarterly report. My first paragraph really kind of bleeds into October, just because it's important information to have. I mean, things are changing kind of on a daily basis, so I just included all that. But our current number of consumers served is 253. We did have a couple referrals this quarter. We discharged about four consumers and then had one new admit as well. And over the course of the quarter, our average caseload size was 32. We did have a case manager leave between July and September, and that was Penny Riedel, and she left in July. What's happened since then is two case managers have resigned in October. I have one, Quinn Johnson, who will be done at the end of this week, and then Kim Helland, who will be done October 30th. So, you know, due to the Medicaid modernization transition and everything, there's no plan to fill these positions. And so we've had to rely on our regional case management unit. That's what it's for. So Hardin and Franklin County will help us out to serve our Story County consumers, because we have about 59 now that need a new case manager. So as we redistribute all of these, I have 39 down here per case manager. I got that down to about 37 with Robin, the other supervisor, and myself also taking some more cases. So Robin and I have about 13 apiece.
What's the top end? I mean, I know we were comfortable at the 32 range.
Yes.
Where does it get completely unwieldy?
Anything above 40, I would say. 35 to 40 is pretty difficult, but
over 40.
Yes, I say.
And it also would probably depend upon the level of service needed for some. You might have one or two that requires a lot more attention than others. And so,
right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's kind of where we're at right now. So what we're trying to focus on, obviously, is still providing the quality of services that we always have, and to make sure that our families, our guardians, our consumers, all those folks have as much information about the transition as possible. So we sent out a letter about a month ago, probably, now, that informed families as to what they would start receiving in the mail from the managed care organizations, and signing up for their managed care organization and that kind of thing. And just kind of informing them of what the timelines are for when they need to do that, and how long they're allowed to have us, which is technically through June 30th of next year. Even with the MCOs taking over January 1st, we've had no real communication with them as to how they want to do this transition. The last time we went through this with the integrated health home model, we spoke with Ireley Ball and those folks and made a plan for how that would occur. I realize it's only the end of October, but there's only a couple months left. So I'm hoping that at some point that will happen, but I really don't have a clear direction. on that at this point. So as far as around this area, there's a kickoff meeting or a public informational meeting. They're having them all across the state, but at the Ames Public Library on November 21st is at 9 a.m. is when the closest one is that will be here. And so that we're trying to kind of get that word out too, that folks can go there and maybe get some of their questions answered and that kind of thing. So that is where we are at.
Erin, would you mind just trying to keep ISAC notified of some of the changes that are taking place at our board meeting? Considerable discussion was on case management issue and talking about the four MCOs. And I guess it sounds like only two right now has really kind of said yes, they're going to try to reach out and absorb some of the case managers from counties. We've not gotten, as of last week, we didn't have a response from at least one other one. And the other one just basically didn't say yes, they were or were not going to basically do that. So there's pressure being brought from all 99 counties and regions regarding where this is going to fall. Because obviously, you know, we've got a lot of case managers in limbo in terms of employment, but the biggest issue again is there going to be any reduction of services to the clients? And we all know that going through transitional periods, that likelihood of not having the necessary information and not having somebody to walk you through the process to make sure that you get attached to an organization to provide that needed service. And that's where the value of the case, locally, the case managers came into play. So I shared what Carla had mentioned to me last week and a couple of the changes. But we're not the only county. We're finding that that several counties' case managers are in the same concern at this point in time, but as you say, without having more information from the MCOs in terms of how this transition is going to really take place, it's very difficult to try to hire someone to replace them just to maintain the existing lower numbers when that could all change. So I do appreciate you, your efforts in this particular area, and I know you're doing everything you possibly can to make sure that our clients are well informed, but I don't know if there are other external assistance that you guys need, but please let us know if there's any other thing that you think would be helpful for us to gain more outreach to do this.
Sure.
Walk me through. So I see kind of three stages of this. Where we are, the reality is the reality, even if we don't know what it is yet, and it seems to be changing daily.
Right.
But it sounds to me like today, while we've got heavy caseloads, we've got caseloads that are at least are manageable to be able to provide the services.
Mm-hmm.
In the immediate future, my big concern would be losing another case manager or two more case managers, then it becomes unmanageable. What is our plan for that if that happens? I'll start there.
It's interesting that you would ask that question. We predicted you would ask that question.
You might be getting that prediction.
You must be. I think I need to say at this point that that's still something that we're working on.
Sure.
I mean, this part has happened fairly quickly, you know, to have two people resign in October. I mean, I think Story County has the largest pool of case managers. You know, Franklin County has one, and Hardin County has three.
Right.
And just by virtue of where they are, there's not the opportunities, and I don't think the marketing, you know, that we've got down here with the MCOs, you know, wanting to hire and all those kinds of things. There's staff leaving provider agencies to go work for these MCOs,
sure,
which then also opens those type of jobs for our case managers.
We've seen both.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. We really need to come up with, like you said, an actual plan as to how long we can, continue to do what we're doing and do it well.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm a huge fan of doing more with less, right? I'm a huge fan of doing more with less. But at some point, it breaks, and you have to do less with less. And it looks to me like we've got about as far as we can go doing more with less, and now the next change, we've got to make a decision. Either we've got to put some resources into it, and that means hiring temp staff, or I don't know, I don't even know what it means,
right?
Or we've got to do less than we're doing. And I just want to make sure, I don't want to make sure we have the answers. I just want to make sure that we're asking the questions right now, because this could hit us. We had two in October. We could have two in November.
Correct.
And we just need to know what questions we're going to ask. Deb?
The Central Iowa Case Management Board is meeting this Thursday, and that is one of the items on the agenda, is to talk about what our transition plan will be. I think this is the first wave that we're seeing of staff changing, and there are concerns about that. But I think the board is planning on addressing that at their meeting this week. And then we're having a meeting with a couple of the with Hardin in Franklin County tomorrow to talk about kind of what Robin and Aaron are seeing firsthand with staff and with clients, to get that input so we're prepared for our meeting on Thursday to put a plan together. But I think the realization is starting to hit us, and we need to ensure for our families and for our clients
Absolutely.
And for staff what the plan will be going forward.
Absolutely. And the three of us just need to be kept in the loop, in as much as staffing decisions and resources are going to need to be put toward this. And, you know, if I'm that predictable, I greatly prefer, even if the plan we have isn't exactly where we end up going, I greatly prefer to have a plan to work from and then adjust that as realities and situations start to hit us.
And there's a meeting, and Aaron, you might be able to talk a little bit more about it. There's a meeting with CCMS next Tuesday. That's County Case Management Services through ISAC. And they've invited...
Yeah, in the morning will be Lee Howland and Debbie Johnson from IME, and then in the afternoon are all the MCOs.
Okay.
So
we're hoping, too, to have some more answers, or at least a little more guidance on where things are.
Yeah, see, I don't like the non-answers. I mean, this is more about what's going on at the state level than anywhere else. But I prefer a bad answer to no answer.
Right.
At least a bad answer, you've got something to work with. And it just feels to me like we're really in limbo right now. So that's the immediate future. Longer term, are we, and I know the answer to this, but I just want to make sure we've all got it on the record. Working toward what community services in Story County is going to look like longer term once all the transition is made. Deb, are you the right one to address that question to?
Well, I suppose. Carl and I have been talking about what direction that office will go, what needs still exist. We still have general assistance, and you heard the statistics about that program today. And then, of course, we're still part of the mental health region. And I think it's real important to understand that what's going on with case management is separate from the mental health region.
Right.
They're interconnected through funding and clients and services, but there's a governing board for the mental health region. There's a governing board for the case management unit. And there's a lot of overlap in terms of the staff. So we'll still have our foot in the door and be part of the mental health region going forward. So we have to look at the needs in terms of staffing for the region in the upcoming years. And I think that discussion is already occurring as the region gears up for the fiscal year 17 budget. If there are other kinds of services or outreach that we can add to the community services office, because we'll have space, we'll have case management staff available, if they're interested in taking on, you know, a different role within the county or within the region. So I think we have to look at all of those possibilities.
And is that a conversation for us during the FY17 budget talk? I mean, give me the timeline that you expect us to have that conversation and start to make some of those decisions.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, during those the work sessions, even before. I mean, I think there's some things that we can even talk about in upcoming board meetings with other services going on in the county, and whether or not community services can play a role in that or offer up support and resources for that. But so I think there are a couple of opportunities coming up to discuss that.
Outstanding. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then final question. Clearly, we got staff leaving. There's an angst in the office. How's everybody holding up in your office, Carla?
You know, I think I should probably let Erin answer that because really the case managers are talking with her more directly about.
It's clearly stressful. I mean, I don't like the unknown.
It's definitely nothing I've ever had to. I mean, you hear people say this on the news all the time when there's like disasters and things like that, but it is definitely different than anything I've ever had to deal with before. People are doing a nice job of coming in and talking to me and things like that. But, yeah, I think there are days when it gets a little uncontrollable there for folks, you know, and looking at what they're going to do. Because you have we have loyal employees.
Absolutely. Great employees.
Yeah. So that's what's made it kind of tough for people.
And rightly so. Now, are we all set for those that are going to remain with us, and understand, completely understand the people who feel like it's in their best interest to go ahead and move on, and support that completely. But is it a July 1st, 2016? I mean, is that kind of our line in the sand of where the huge transition is going to come? Is that our expectation at this point?
I'm talking to
case management specifically.
Correct. I mean, if the line in the sand as far as how long a person can keep their case manager, yes, is June 30th of 2016.
Right. And then the question is, what kind of workload we have between, is it January 1st?
January 1st is that.
Correct.
Yeah. Right.
What kind of transition there is.
Okay. And I think we could start to see individuals transitioning in January. Right. Over to the community-based case management with the MCOs. We need information from the MCOs on how soon are they going to be ready to start taking people on and serving them. But we could start to see folks transition as early as January.
Sure, but it's in our consumers' best interest that we figuratively hold their hand all the way through the transition, isn't it? And so if Story County's on the hook to trying to provide the best service possible, even somebody who's transitioning, I would suggest we need to be there beside them as long as we possibly can until it's fully transitioned rather than there being a gap. Are we viewing it that way?
I think so, yes.
Now, I believe DHS has put out a blueprint in terms of what services that the MCOs are supposed to be able to provide statewide, you know, that they're coming in. And we were told that they will be monitoring and working with them during this transitional phase. That's why I'm just wondering how we make sure that we have information. If we find there's glitches, if we find that there's potentially some services that are currently supposed to be covered under this that are not going to be accessed, or they're going to be delayed for a period of time because of the numbers and the timing, is there an alternative in place for those clients to receive some services, or do they just go without until there's a slot that opens? And I mean, I don't understand the whole process from that standpoint, but one of the things that what we're trying to do through the CSN and through working with member counties is to stay on top of tracking the services that we have. We got a report, for example, I think it had something with the number of clients that were served, and that was through the database and things of this nature. So as you guys continue to work through at the local level, I'm sure Carla and Deb will make sure that all of this is discussed at the regional level as well within our 10-county region, but I think it needs to also go to the highest level of the decision makers at the state level, because the worst thing in the world for us to do is to move into a new system with all these great assumptions that this is just really going to solve all our problems and find that we still have some major challenges to work through in the short term. Because at the end of the day, everybody is saying that the services is not going to be grossly impacted. Well, the jury's out on that.
Well, yeah, what you're not hearing, Wayne, is you're not hearing anybody talk about that services are going to be improved. At least I've not heard anybody talking about that this system is going to improve service. Everything I've heard is there's supposed to be cost savings. And you know, whether that's a reality or not, time will tell. I know where I tend to believe that is. But the reality is it still rests with us as the Story County Board of Supervisors to try to make sure we got a system in place to serve our citizens.
Yeah.
And you know, it's great to be able to pass the buck and say, oh yeah, that's not our responsibility anymore, but the reality is it is our responsibility. Even if we don't have the authority anymore to make sure that all those are getting provided, I believe we got to have some kind of system where we're looking to fill the gaps that I think inevitably are going to occur in this new system. And it's one of the reasons that I'm starting to feel really, really anxious about us putting together what this plan might look like. Again, a plan that may not take us all the way through, but at least gets us started in where we're headed. And, you know, it feels like we just finished off the whole CLP to Optimate, and now this one feels like it's hitting us again. I want to tell you guys how much I appreciate you, your staff. I mean, I know they're going through a really, really difficult time, but you guys are pros, and we're sure lucky to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else?
No.
Thanks. No other reports today. Public forum number 2 is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. Board may not take any action due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address us? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, liaison assignments, Paul?
Pass.
Wayne?
Pass.
Announcements to supervisors, Paul?
Pass.
And Wayne?
Pass.
Good quadrant meeting last night. Thanks to Leanne and Deb and Drew for being there down in Slater. Nice when we're able to get to reach out to the community regardless of the response that we have. One of those things that I think is going to grow, and wanted to say how much I appreciated the two of you taking your evening to come down to Slater for a meeting. If there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn.
So move.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And we are adjourned. Thank you.